Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rolling Stone magazine has a very interesting list in this month's issue. Game Changers 2012, the Mavericks, Rebels, and Troublemakers who altered the universe as we know it. You are listening to Alabama Shakes. They made honorable mention, actually, and the magazine's editors say about them, no flash, no faking, just down-home rock and soul from working-class Southerners and a year awash with glitzy dance pop. Will Dana, managing editor of Rolling Stone, is our guest this hour, and he'll be talking about the list. I'm so old, I don't even know who some of these people are, so I feel like I'm going to become young this hour or find out what's happening in the music scene. It's politicians, it's music people, and we're going to have some fun. You may want to add somebody to this list or talk about somebody you think was a maverick, a rebel, or a troublemaker who altered the universe as we know it. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Will. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great pleasure to have you here.
On public radio. I'll also point out that Alabama Shake song was, we also named that the best song of the year, in a different list in the issue.
You did? I kind of like it. You know, I feel like I'm missing a whole world here. I really do. So I'll go out and listen to more Alabama Shakes. Do you want to start with them? Who is this group?
Well, they're this group that kind of just came out of nowhere earlier in the year. They are from rural Alabama. The woman, the singer, Brittany Howard, has just got this amazing voice and this sort of big, soulful, empathetic songwriting talent. She was a postal carrier a year ago.
Oh, I love this story.
Yeah, and they got discovered by there's a group down south called the Drive By Truckers, and the Patterson Hooder, I think, is the name, is the head of that group, and he'd signed them to his small label, and they just sort of filtered up, and you know, they put out an album earlier in the year. They've been playing concerts all year, and they're just a great young band, and I think everyone's really looking forward to see what they do next.
So you never know, right?
Yeah.
Happy New Year. You never know.
Yep. Uh-huh.
You might become a star.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a lot of problems coming up with who these Mavericks, Rebels, and Troublemakers were going to be because there were so many of them, or was the list small and obvious?
I wouldn't say it was obvious, but you know, it was a couple of meetings, and we threw the names out, and just we reached a consensus pretty quickly. You know, and then obviously we put in a list of honorable mentions at the end because we couldn't quite contain everyone.
Mm-hmm. One of the guys, we had a chance to interview him this year, and I must say I followed his website pretty closely at the end of the presidential election, but the guy who had a year was Nate Silver, wasn't he?
Oh, my, yeah.
Did he have a year?
Did anyone come out of 2012 looking better than that guy?
I know. I know, but he was discounted so much. He really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he was discounted by the people who felt threatened by him. But I think, you know, pretty much everybody else realized that this guy seemed to know what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to say things with a lot more credibility and a lot less hysteria and a lot less of an agenda than most of the pundits who were talking about the election through the fall.
Well, he certainly knew what he was doing in the world of baseball, didn't he? People noticed him in that world quite some time ago.
Well, it's funny that, you know, when someone applies those techniques to polling, it upsets so many apple carts, you know, that people don't want to hear the real numbers. I mean, obviously, in baseball, it was the same thing when that kind of statistical analysis took over. You know, a couple of decades ago, you know, all the old timers didn't want to hear it. They thought these people were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did the same thing with polling, you know, because how else do you explain the fact that these polls are so divergent, because they so often reflect the biases of the people who are commissioning them?
I think he told us that his parents met at UW-Madison. Everybody has connections to Wisconsin sooner or later. All the smart people, right?
Exactly, yeah. You know, I couldn't get in.
Right. So before we talk about specifics, was this a really meaningful year when it came to music? Were there people who were, like Alabama Shakes, who came out of nowhere, who were just phenomenally good? Or was it a year of people who weren't very good, who, because of publicity or whatever, made it to the top?
I think this was kind of a strange, you know, and I'm sure I'll be attacked for saying this, but I think it was kind of an off year for music. Bands like Alabama Shakes, I think, were great, but, you know, you had, it's harder and harder for rock bands to really make much of a mark these days, commercially or culturally. You had much, you know, the continuing rise of the sort of the pop, of the resurgent pop song, whether it's Taylor Swift or Kesha or Carly Jepsen. You know, then you also had the electronic and dance music bubbling up. But I think for the sort of bread and butter of what Rolling Stone has been about over the years, which is rock and roll music, rock feels a little bit like it's an eclipse right now.
Taylor Swift is sure huge, isn't she? She seems a bit... I keep looking for more depth there. Maybe she's just young.
Well, I think what you get with a lot of these pop stars is you get impeccable craft over depth.
Mm.
You know, and I think that you can't fault her for not knowing how to make a great, hooky, beautifully crafted, punchy, simple, fun song. You know, if you think maybe music should be delivering more than that, there are obviously some questions to be answered. But I think, you know, for what Taylor does, she does it extremely well.
Here's somebody who made the list of one of the movers and shakers, the game changers. Why don't you set it up for us? We have a little bit of a clip. The dubster rock star, Skrillex.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about Skrillex and then we'll listen?
Well, Skrillex, yeah, Skrillex. There's another guy who sort of came out of
nowhere. I got the name wrong. I'm so out of
Skrillex,
it.
Skrillex, yes.
Sorry. Okay.
And he also probably had the haircut of the year.
Yes, he has a great haircut.
A kind of sideways mullet.
Uh-huh. So, who is he?
Skrillex is a guy, I guess his early 20s. He's basically, it's kind of a fascinating story. He left home to play in a punk band when he was in his early teens. So he's kind of been on his own for close to 10 years and has had, you know, an entire career of ups and downs. And then in the past couple of years, he switched over to making electronic music, you know, dance music, and latched on this form called dubstep, which is a very, almost like the heavy metal of dance music. And it's very kind of big and harsh and abrasive with a sort of tunefulness underneath it. And this guy, these people have... all these DJs and dance guys, they haven't really crossed over to the mainstream culture yet, but there's a tremendous, huge kind of alternative culture right now based around dance music. I mean, they throw these festivals like the Electric Daisy Festival in Las Vegas every June, which is the biggest festival in the country, even though Bonnaroo and Lollapalooza get so much more attention.
Hmm. All right, so let me get this right, Skrillex.
Skrillex.
And that's a song that he remixed that features Rihanna?
Right.
It sounds kind of otherworldly to me. It sounds like a spaceship.
Yeah, well, that doesn't even sound like the real his real trademark sound, which is just feels like someone is driving an electric sledgehammer into your brain, but in a good way.
I'm not sure what that means
at all. Someone described his music to me as panic on an elliptical machine, which I thought was very funny.
Do you like it?
I'm not sure it's quite what I would listen to in my spare time, but I understand it. I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let's invite our listeners in on the conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we're speaking with the managing editor of Rolling Stone. Will Dana is with us. We like lists. Everybody likes lists at the end of the year. These are game changers. Of 2012, Mavericks, Rebels, and Troublemakers Who Alter the Universe as We Know It. Who would you put on that list? 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Let's take a phone call from Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'd like to talk about the game changers in politics, one positive, and three who... cited in one fashion or another how bad things are. And on the positive side, I'd cite George Lakoff, who has a little blue blog, who gave us timely updates on issues and still does, the latest being on the gun issue and also corporate servitude in Michigan. And on the negative side, I'd cite Matt Taibbi, T-A-I-B-B-I, from your great magazine, Jesse Ventura, who made appearances on the TV and on the net and through his book American Conspiracies, and finally Mitt Romney, that deaf, dumb, and morally blind kid who plays sure played a mean pinball.
Will, what
yes.
do you think?
Well, why do you put Taibbi on the negative list?
No, he put him on the positive list.
Well,
oh, yeah.
I put him in the negative only in the context of showing how bad things are in the world.
Oh, okay.
I think Taibbi is very honest, and he shows us failings on both sides of the fence.
Yes.
He is a heck of a reporter.
Yes, we are thrilled to have him here.
Yeah. He's...
It always amazes me that the stuff that, you know, that the rest of the media leaves all this stuff open for us to write about.
And isn't that true? That is so true. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think that he's not constrained by being a beat reporter like, you know, a lot of guys who cover Wall Street are, who depend on, you know, on access to file their daily stories. You know, I think where Matt can come in and he can spend 2 or 3 months working on a piece, he's not beholden to his sources in the same way.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a whole different construct.
It's also interesting to me. I know that Matt's background is not, you know, heavily into economics. You don't have to have that kind of background to be a whale of a reporter. You just have to be smart and work very, very hard at it and then make it understandable
to
those of us.
Well, I think one of Matt's great insights has been that that one of the ways that sort of the people who run Wall Street have gotten away with it is by acting like it's all too complicated for normal people to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, you know, and coming up with all this jargon and, you know, and making it all sound like sort of mysterious and difficult and almost like it takes place in some kind of other scientific realm. And I think what Matt was able to say is, no, it's not that complicated. You're ripping us off.
Hmm.
And here's how.
Mitt Romney, of course, did not make the list. He may have
nor
if
did,
he
nor
had
did
won.
He, nor did he quite change the game he wanted to change, I don't think.
Right. Elizabeth Warren did make the list, and her national work has really only just begun in a major way. Populist warrior, you call her, and her defense of the middle class. Now she's going to be on the banking committee. She's going to be a significant voice.
Well, also because, I mean, they basically tried to knock her down and, you know, push her to the sidelines. And, you know, she responded by coming back into an even more powerful position.
And here she is. This is a clip from Elizabeth's acceptance speech.
Every family that has been chipped at, squeezed, and hammered, we're going to fight for a level playing field, and we're going to put people back to work. Small business owners who are tired of the system rigged against them. We're going to hold the big guys accountable. Yeah. To all the seniors who deserve to retire with the security they earned, we're going to make sure your Medicare and Social Security benefits are protected and that millionaires and billionaires pay their fair share. To all the young people, who did everything right, and are drowning in debt, we're going to invest in you.
Elizabeth Warren, who did make the list, and she is, are there many voices like hers who are at the highest level of government now? Will she shake things up in that there will be more people who will adhere to that kind of populist philosophy?
Well, I mean, I think that remains to be seen. There are obviously a few populist types in the Senate, you know, Bernie Sanders from Vermont being the most
right.
prominent one. But, you know, obviously being a senator from Massachusetts is a high visibility job. You know, she's new to the Senate where seniority counts for a lot, so she's going to probably have to work hard to sort of get her message heard outside the Senate walls, I think, you know, to make an immediate impact. But I think that's what a smart politician does.
She has a rare quality about her that you listen to her, and she is just extremely genuine, isn't she?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, I think she gets a little bit back to what I was saying about Matt Taibbi, is that, you know, she demystifies it. You know, she talks about these issues in matters of fairness, in very simple, direct language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't obfuscate or mystify or make things sound like they're more complicated than they are. And, it's an appeal that doesn't come across as purely being liberal, you know, liberal, conservative, popular, whatever label you want to put on it. It just seems direct and plain spoken and honest. And that's what I think people respond to.
Yes, they do. Will Dana, managing editor of Rolling Stone, is with us this hour, and we're talking about the game changers of 2012, the Mavericks, the Rebels, the Troublemakers, who altered the universe as we know it. There are many more to come, and we're welcoming phone calls from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hey, Mike. What would you say were the two biggest campaign mistakes that we made?
You look tired a lot in the hat.
I liked the hat. What are you
the
talking
hat
about?
Hurt us. Your head looked weird in the hat. That's all I'm going to say.
That, of course, is the television show Veep, which made the list. And Frank Rich was one of the producers. We talked to Frank about that particular program, which became, you know, kind of a hit. It's up for a lot of awards, I think, for Golden Globes, I think, coming up in the next couple months. Why is that a game changer?
Well, you know, we put it on our supplemental list. I think it did not attract a lot of viewers, but it was such a, I thought, a great and completely cynical and hard bitten look at the world of politics, where where not one person seems to act out of any positive motive. And they're feeling that even the vice president, you know, that even the most powerful, even someone as powerful as the vice president really, in effect, has no power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of the vision of that show, is that here are all these people caught in this rat, you know, in this sort of habit trail of Washington politics, and no one really has any real power, except to basically either, you know, the only power people really have in the show is to try to somehow destroy the person who's just beneath them on the ladder.
Yeah. Did you think it was extremely well written, funny?
Beautifully written. And I think if you, to digress for a second, if you've ever seen his movie In the Loop by that guy Armando Iannucci, which is an amazing movie, because what it really does is, it, in this very satirical, fictionalized way, it actually tells the story of how the Bush administration faked the intelligence on the WMD in Iraq.
Oh, no.
It's a brilliant conceit, is that he turns this true. I mean, he invents fictional characters, but the whole situation is kind of exactly what happened. You know, told in a sort of almost as a restoration comedy.
Huh. I'll have to watch that. It's interesting that a British guy can get American politics so right on, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think maybe the Brits are better at sort of envy and expressing seething, repressed hatred than we are, because that's really sort of what it is.
Let's go to more phone calls. Tim in La Crosse. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I would like to take the conversation back to rock and roll, to tell you the truth.
Sure.
If we could actually talk about Radiohead quickly, because Radiohead has completely changed my life. And I was lucky enough that my wife bought me tickets to go to Bonnaroo so I could go see him, and I drove 15 hours.
15 hours?
15 hours to Tennessee, and it was by far fulfilled my life, at least.
Why?
For now.
Yeah, for now.
Well, they're from Europe. They don't come to the States very often,
uh-huh.
And I was just curious if you had anything to say about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're certainly someone that we have covered a lot over the years and have a great amount of respect for and affection for their music. They weren't on this year's list because I think this was not, I mean, this was a year where sort of Radiohead just continue to do what they've been doing rather than a few years ago when, for instance, they, you know, upended the entire model of the record industry by putting up their album on the internet directly to the internet. But, you know, a great band and certainly one of the most challenging, interesting rock bands going right now.
Let's go back to music for a little bit. Sometimes I watch Saturday Night Live, and then I feel like I'm learning a little bit more about popular music. Tell us the story, and we'll hear him in a moment. You call him the bravest soul man alive, Frank Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Well, Frank Ocean was an R&B singer who, you know, a year ago, very few people had heard of. He's from Los Angeles and put out a great album mid-year, late spring, and then, you know, which was growing steadily, and then I think he sort of got a lot more people to pay attention to him over the summer when he came out of the closet and talked about that a lot of the songs on the record were actually written to another man, a lot of the love songs. You know, in the world of sort of hip hop and R&B has been famous for an anti-gay, homophobic sort of fear of the homosexual subtext to the music, mm-hmm. And so. You know, I think a lot of people thought that he was going to go and get called out for this and be attacked for it. And, you know, I think showing some real change in that world, you know, most of the big hip-hop stars immediately came out and embraced him and said what a gutsy thing it was to do.
Mm. Let's listen to him.
A tornado flew around my room before you came. Excuse the mess it made. It usually doesn't rain in Southern California, much like Arizona. My eyes don't shed tears, but boy, they pour when I'm thinking about you. Oh, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. You, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. Do you think about me still? Do you, do you?
Frank Ocean. I like him.
I think what's also interesting about Frank Ocean was he did it when he came out. It was in such a matter-of-fact way. You know, it was he posted a letter in his Tumblr. He didn't give a ton of interviews afterwards talking about it. You know, it just it was just like he was just talking to his fans. And I think it was in also a kind of new model for how people are coming out now, where it's seeming like less and less of a big deal, and you know, less and less of a momentous announcement, and just people more just telling people who they are.
Exactly.
You know,
which
so I think
how
he,
it should
I,
be. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that he also kind of caught that wave as well. Mm. And, you know, stood for that.
Let's go to Bill in Madison next. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Oddly, on my list on the negative side would be Paul Ryan, and the reason I say Paul Ryan is because much was made by both him and, you know, people writing about and talking about him. And his the influence of the works of Ayn Rand on his, you know, intellectual development. And I had not been all that familiar with Ayn Rand, except generally. And so I actually read her books, and I know other people who did too, and suddenly came away appalled at the moral and intellectual basis of modern conservatism really seems to be about. And I think it certainly opened my eyes as to what it was about. And it basically crystallized for me what exactly repels me about, you know, modern conservatism.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Ayn Rand, she writes comic books, novels, which get taken as being these substantial intellectual tracts, which they really aren't.
Here's somebody, Luke on Facebook writes, what does our guest think of J.D. McPherson?
J.D., he's the folk singer,
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's a talent. You know, put out a really good album. Very talented young guy, and he's one of those people who would really be watching to see what he does next.
Let's go back to comedy. Louis C.K. rewriting the rules of comedy. What were the rules of comedy? Who is he? How did he rewrite them?
Well, I mean, Louis C.K. Did two very different, very significant things that were similar. First of all, I mean, he did what I mentioned about Radiohead earlier, is that he took his comedy specials, made them available on the, you know, on his website for $5. You could buy them. So he completely, you know, he bypassed the whole world of HBO, of record labels, and just went right to the fans, and sold it, so, you know, and made his work available much less, you know, much cheaper than it would have been. It was, you know, not on TV, that you not to have, it wasn't sold as a DVD. So that was one thing. And he, and, you know, and he just, and what's interesting is he just does this himself. It's like, you know, he practically built the website himself. You know, it's not, it's like he's this one man operation. And then he also does this great show, Louie, on the FX network, which is in the guise of a half-hour sitcom. It's like every week he makes a little independent movie. I mean, I was saying it's like the show is almost more like a John Cassavetes movie than it is like
really
Half Men. Yeah. I mean, there are these very strange, slow-moving, very funny, awkward, you know, sort of little vignettes. You don't want to call it, I mean, they happen to be 30 minutes long, and they happen to be funny, so you want to call it a sitcom, but it really isn't. And just beautifully observed, with a sort of downbeat, sort of slightly, sort of gently self-loathing attitude about them. And just, you know, he's a great character, and, you know, once again, a man who just speaks with such utter honesty about himself and the world around him.
And here is Louis C.K., stand up on naming kids.
You know what's amazing to me? You can name your kid anything you want. Isn't that incredible? There are no laws. There should be a couple of laws. None. You can literally name your kid anything. You can name your kid a name with no vowels if you want, like Pinsendleton. Just 40 F's, that's his name. Go clean your room. I like to name my kid a whole phrase, you know, something like ladies and gentlemen. That would be a cool name for a kid. This is my son, ladies and gentlemen. Then when he gets out of hand, I get to go, ladies and gentlemen, please.
That's funny. That is true. There are a lot of people who are naming their children some pretty strange things.
You know, he's a guy, you know, he's been around for a long time, and I think, you know, over 10 years, almost any comedian would say that they thought Louis C.K. was the funniest guy out there. But I think he never had quite figured out how to break through to a bigger audience. And I think what he did in the last couple of years was he realized the only way he was going to break through was to completely do it his own way.
So you know, from what you said about him, I assume he's not a particularly wealthy guy.
I actually think he's doing pretty darn well now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. I mean, because I think he's just taken everything in. He's cut out the middleman. He does it himself. I mean, the show he makes on FX, I mean, I think he took less money from them, but in return, he has utter complete control over the final product, which is very rare on television.
Hmm.
You know, he just sends it to them and says, okay, here it is, and they put it on the air, which I don't think anyone else can do now.
Huh, interesting. Okay, let's go to Marty in Sister Bay. Hello, Marty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know if you consider music in the classical world, but Michael Tilson Thomas is a music director out in San Francisco, and he plays a lot of modern, cutting-edge contemporary music, and he gets away with it because of who he is. And I attended a concert once he did in Chicago, and the whole program was modern, contemporary, unknown composers, and it was really wonderful.
Hmm. Will?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, we have interviewed him quite a few years ago, Michael Tilson Thomas, and I know that we covered him again because he did a concert with the remaining members of the Grateful Dead a few years ago in San Francisco. And I just, you know, he's one of those people who just has figured out how to do it his way and, you know, to build a world that he can, you know, that he can function in, and, you know, it's one of those great stories.
Thank you, Marty. We have openings in our phone lines now. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And if you'd like to leave your own thoughts about the Game Changers, the Mavericks, Rebels, and Troublemakers who alter the universe as we know it on our Facebook page, we would like for you to do that. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Let's talk about Bill McKibben for a moment. He was in Madison recently, and you say when you talk about him as being a game changer, a founding father of climate change, Michael Mann says he is single-handedly changing the public conversation about climate change and the moral imperative of us acting now. How is he doing that?
Well, you know, he's launched this organization, 350.org, but I mean, that's just the vehicle through which. But you know, what he's really done is he's figured out a new way to talk about climate change, which is to really take it to the oil companies and say, this is, you know, this is a moral issue, this is a scientific issue, but it's really about going to the oil companies and saying, we hold you responsible for this. And, you know, and he's in the current tour he's on right now is he's going around to campuses trying to encourage a divestment movement, much as with the South African divestment movement of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been amazing, the wildfire. I mean, he published a story in Rolling Stone over the summer, which got the single highest amount of traffic one story's ever gotten on our
really?
Website. Yep. You know, and it just took off. And I think that, I mean, here's another guy, I mean, like Louis C.K., that he's been saying this stuff for years, right? But, you know, suddenly this year, he brought a new urgency to it. He brought a new way to talk about it. You know, he simplified the message. He focused the message. He gave people someone to get mad at and someone to understand this is how you make change happen. You know, it isn't sitting around saying, wouldn't it be great if people stopped, you know, people put more air in their tires and changed their light bulbs. But he went there and said, here's who we can be mad at. Here's the people to take it to them and say, this is how we get the change that we need.
Mm. Do you feel that in the year 2012, as you know, we're living through this horror of Newtown and maybe a substantial change in the gun climate in this country, in the gun culture,
yeah,
that we may in 2013 see something quite different? And perhaps because of Hurricane Sandy and the drought in the Midwest and all of that, there's... The time has come for us to pay serious attention to climate change. I feel that that was a game changer in 2012.
Well, yeah, I think we'll make McKibben's on that. I was really thinking Obama's speech in Newtown the other day when he was about protecting our children.
It was an extraordinary speech,
and I
wasn't
thought,
it?
Well, you could give the same speech about climate change. You know,
right.
The way to talk about climate change is not about us. It's about our children and our grandchildren and the world that they're going to live in. And, you know, if you're really serious about this issue, that's how you have to think about it.
And here is Bill McKibben.
We're not going to stop global warming. We've raised the temperature a degree, and stopping short of 2 degrees is going to be a huge trick. But we can keep it from getting worse than it has to get, I think is the best one can say at this point. 3 degrees would be much worse than 2, and 4 degrees would be exponentially worse than 3, you know. I don't have any, utopia to offer here. We have a dystopia to avoid, and that's about as good as we can do at this point. Well, one of the things that's changed in the last couple of years is the temperature. It keeps going up, and every time it goes up, every time we have this insane weather like we've been having, it helps more and more people understand where we are and what the reality is.
Bill McKibben. He was in Rolling Stone as one of the game changers of 2012, the Mavericks, Rebels, and Troublemakers, who altered the universe as we know it. More phone calls from you in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is Will Dana. He is managing editor of Rolling Stone. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is talking about the changers of the game in 2012. Will Dana, managing editor of Rolling Stone magazine, is with us, and let's go to Dino in Plattsville. Hi, Dino.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks.
I just want to say I'm continually grateful for the wonderful programming on WPR. Hope you guys are able to keep up the thoughtful discourse through the new year. My game changer for 2012 is the Canadian indie rock band Walk Off the Earth. I think they're best known for going viral on YouTube covering the Gautier song, where they all five stood in front of the camera and played a single guitar. But they've since released a new EP, and I think they have a wonderful sound quality to them. Their production quality for their videos is awesome, and it's so organic. And their song, Red Hands, that's one I haven't been able to get out of my head lately, and I want to know if your guests will provide commentary on that. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Dino.
Oh, well, I can't say I'm too familiar with that band. I'm actually not. I have a whole department of rock critics that work for us, and I don't oversee the music coverage myself. But there's certainly someone that I think we've covered in little bits and pieces in the magazine. You know, it's tough with, you know, we are, you know, these rock bands that we cover, you know, they have smaller and smaller audiences, and it's a very difficult time to be a young rock band these days. And I really give credit to anyone who's sort of entering this world, because the industry is sort of not on your side anymore like it used to be.
Hmm. Well, I'm wondering if you are in a young rock band. I've been in radio for years and years, and you used to play songs on the radio, and then some of them would become hits. But now you can't do that anymore. So I'm wondering, where do you go? Do you go to YouTube? Do you go to...
You go to YouTube, you play clubs, you build your audience, you know, person by person, note by note. You know, it's back to a whole different model than it used to be. And certainly people are making it and doing very well in this world, but, the days of sort of the record company signing you a big contract and supporting you through 3, 4, or 5 albums and underwriting your touring, you know, those are gone.
Yeah, they sure are.
And now it's really a hand-built model. And, you know, if you're going into that world, you have to understand that everything that the way it used to happen doesn't happen anymore, and you can't expect that.
So if you want to be a consumer of what's good, Will, what do you do?
You read Rolling Stone.
I thought you would say that.
Yeah,
it's true.
I think most music these days is discovered via social networks. You know, so it's you follow people on Twitter or on Facebook whose taste that you like, and you know they post links and you post links, and you know that's really how it goes. And you know, more and more smart bands are figuring out, you know, how to play that and how to work that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making stuff available for free on the web is very important. You're not going to sell a lot of records anymore. In fact, you're probably better off giving your music away for free and selling concert tickets.
Right, that you have to sell yourself. I know that. Right.
Yeah.
Dino, thanks very much for the call. Tell me the background of where this guy, who's highly entertaining, and you can probably only take so much of him. I don't know what he's going to do in 2013. PSI and the first wave of the Asian invasion.
I think Psy is someone who's probably more symbolizing the changes in the game than actually himself being an artist who's going to continue to be very significant. But I think this was the first international pop hit that happened completely virally. In that, you know, there wasn't a record company marketing this guy. You know, it just happened. I mean, obviously he's been big in Korea for years, and you know, he's among the most famous musicians in South Korea. But outside of the Asian Peninsula, no one knew who he was. But this one video just caught on, you know, and one person saw it and said to their friend, "You got to see this."
It was kind of humorous, really.
Yeah, very funny. And I think it's up over 400 million views now, which is funny. You know, what's funny is that the video is making sort of pointed and poking fun at a sort of South Korean society, which I don't think obviously was lost on everybody outside of the world, because it just seems like a funny, goofy thing of a guy doing a funny dance.
Here's part of it.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자, 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자, 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자, 그런 반전 있는 여자.
Reminds me of all of those disco. I can see the lights going. The disco of when was the disco craze? The 80s?
Yeah, late 70s.
Late 70s. It was a while.
Yeah, I mean,
ago.
But he's an extremely canny, savvy, you know, pop craft, you know, crafter of pop songs. You know, and that sound is a sort of slightly sounds like the dubstep music. You know, the refrain in the song.
Right.
So it's like he's bringing together, you know, a lot of currents in sort of in pop and electronic music. So I think he's probably more important than, like, the Macarena guys, you know, from the 90s, which was sort of who he was compared to a lot. But I think there's a little more going on with him than with those guys.
Now, isn't it interesting? There are several people who are listening now we've talked about whose time has come. McKibben, Louis C.K., Elizabeth Warren has been around. We'll get to Bruce Springsteen in a moment. This guy who's been around. Isn't it interesting? Was it a year when people who had been around were, for whatever reason, discovered again, and this was just their moment for some reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably every year you see that, but it's, yeah, the people you stick around long enough, you don't compromise, you don't change, and suddenly the world comes to you. And I think that's one of the things that really holds together this whole list is, you know, these are people that sort of the world came to them this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they did it their way. They didn't follow the rules. They didn't do the thing they were supposed to do.
Let's go back to politics for a moment and to a woman from our state. And when we talked earlier about letting people know who you are and it being no big deal, it was certainly the case with Tammy Baldwin, the first openly gay senator. And it was not a big deal. And it just, and here she is. It was an interesting race. But she made the list of honorable mention. Let's listen to her and then talk about her.
Now, I am well aware that I will have the honor to be Wisconsin's first woman U.S. Senator. And I am well aware that I will be the first openly gay member. But I didn't run to make history. I ran to make a difference.
That was a good line, wasn't it? I didn't run to make history, ran to make a difference. Yeah. So she made the list of honorable mentions this year.
Yes. Well, yeah, I don't think her campaign had quite the galvanizing national significance that Elizabeth Warren did. And obviously it was a big deal, but I think that Warren is someone who had sort of been on top of the banks for years,
right?
You know, and had been sort of, you know, had her knees cut off in Washington and got right back up and, you know, sort of got her revenge.
She sure did. Let's talk to Anna.
Story.
Anna in La Crosse wants to talk about Tammy. Hi, Anna.
Hello. I felt the need to call when you brought up Tammy Baldwin because while I was never a particular fan of hers, I am not a fan of Tommy Thompson. My father was a full disclosure. My father was a union president, and Tommy was in office most of his tenure at school. And I was just thrilled that the last election, the only election he lost, was to a gay woman. I apologize for getting some kind of sick pleasure out of that. But I am so proud of her for standing up. And I'm also proud of her for defeating Tommy Thompson because I don't think he deserved it just because he's a politician. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. In some ways it was, am I making too much of this? You sort of feel that you're handing over ideas, power, music, the game changers, the mavericks, the troublemakers to a different generation. And people didn't pay attention to that. People didn't realize that was happening. Thus, you got the president reelected by very, very large numbers. People didn't see that.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I think about, you know, everyone saying they didn't see it. You know, we ran a story in the spring in which Obama's campaign people explained exactly what their strategy was going to be. There was a long story in the New Yorker in October, you know, which once again they explained exactly how they were going to win the election. And then, you know, the Republicans on the day after the day after Election Day, we're like, where'd this come from? We had no idea he was going to do this. We had no idea these voters were there.
Right.
You know, I think they just, it was the blindness, and it was, you know, that they couldn't get out of thinking, you know, fighting the last war, of running the election the way that the last few were run. You know, and I think these voters were hiding in plain sight, and it seemed like the obvious sensible thing that anyone would do who's trying to run a campaign.
Mm-hmm. Led by their musician in chief, who was number two on the list, and here he is.
I occasionally get a call from President Obama, and he called me a couple times a week, actually. It's become a bit of a nuisance, but, you know, have I heard any new music lately? But he called a bit of an uncomfortable request about a few weeks ago. He said, Bruce, campaign song. I tried to come up with something. I can sing a line and then you yell out forward the campaign slogan. This is how it's supposed to work. Kissed your sister, then I kissed your mama. Usually this time of day, I'm in my pajamas. Let's vote for the man who got Osama. Forward and away we go. It's not so bad. But then, when I got to the second verse, I had a problem because I couldn't think of any other words that rhymed with Obama.
Will, what do you think of that? Was it good?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, Springsteen's been around for many, many years, and I think it's easy to forget what an extraordinary career this man's having.
Yes.
And just, you know, just year in and year out, you know, the tours, the albums, the commitment, the commitment to a certain set of values that he, you know, believes in so honestly and dearly. And, you know, it's like, with all the success and all the money he's made, that he still kind of remains the guy that you can relate to and the guy that speaks from his heart. And, you know, it's easy to sort of have him almost go fade into the woodwork just because he's been doing this for so long. But I think we felt that once again, you know, here's a guy who just had a great year. You know, put out a fantastic album, a very, very angry record, with real turmoil and, you know, sort of looking at the inequality in American life, but and doing it in a way that was direct and emotional, and through the voices of the characters he was creating. You know, so it didn't just feel like, you know, some sort of populist rant.
Hmm. And finally, we'll get to the person who is number one on the Game Changers of 2012, the new girl, excuse me, Lena Dunham. Why is she way up there?
Well, you know, I think Lena Dunham, you know, that show just came out. Well, it didn't quite come out of nowhere because she had made a movie that was seen a couple of years before. But, you know, here's a girl that just talked about breaking every single rule of what you're supposed to do. You know, she showed this incredibly honest, funny, open, heartfelt look at, or not heartfelt, but it was kind of dark, of, you know, sort of young women living in Brooklyn, talking very frankly about sex and about sex and money and their jobs and their feelings of sort of being trapped and hopeless, living in Williamsburg, you know, working at the lowest rung of sort of Manhattan jobs and art galleries and publishing firms and getting...
Let's listen. We're almost out of time. I want to hear just a little bit of her, and then we'll have to say goodbye, but here she is.
I got asked on a date.
Oh, what? Where?
At the pharmacy, by the pharmacist, Eric.
Oh, he's cute.
He's really cute, and he's going to take me to the benefit for Carrie Lawrence's family.
Oh, that was an unfortunate thing.
But we had a plan.
Yeah, we did.
I don't really think that you guys are understanding the severity of this situation. I have been dating someone who treats my heart like it's monkey meat. I feel like a delusional, invisible person half the time. So I need to learn what it's like to be treated well before it's too late for me.
Lena Dunham on her show Girls, and that will do it for this hour. We could just go on. We're having a great time. Will Dana, thank you so much. Managing editor of Rolling Stone. It was a great list, and thanks for all that your magazine does.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad you did. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program, and for all of your calls. As always, we'll be with you again tomorrow at 9. Great conversations ahead here on the Ideas Network.